Knowledge is power, and we are all about empowering the mamas of the world. In each episode, we will unravel and interpret the latest research and evidence-based practices for pregnancy, postpartum, and motherhood. As mums and researchers ourselves, we have experienced firsthand the overwhelming complexity of information, myths, and those classic old wives' tales. I'm Dr. Renee White, and this is The Science of Motherhood.
Hello and welcome to episode 114 of The Science of Motherhood. I am your host, Dr. Renee White. Thank you so much for joining me today. We have got a very cool guest coming up. It's actually very rare of us to have a male guest on our podcast, but, you know, when the shoe fits, we get the experts in. So before we dive into today's episode, I just wanted to mention that we are going to be offering something very, very new and exciting at Fill Your Cup. So for all those playing at home, if you haven't heard of Fill Your Cup before, because you've been hiding under a rock, that's okay. No, when I am not in front of the microphone in your ears, I am leading the charge with Australia's premier doula village, and we have a beautiful village of 14 doulas across Victoria, Tasmania, and New South Wales. And we have, for a very, very long time, since the inception in 2020, been focusing on postpartum care. So that's in-home care of mamas and their bubbas when they come home from hospital or after their home birth. And we cook up beautiful, nourishing meals. We provide practical and emotional support, which is very, very important to our mamas. We also provide an opportunity to essentially just take the mental load off their shoulders at any opportunity. We'll organize appointments for you. You need to get to a lactation consultant, or you need a referral for osteo or pelvic floor physiotherapist. We are your gals, and that has been our jam for the past 3 years now. And I'm really excited to announce that we are going to be doing the former end. Before your baby arrives, we are going to be offering services as birth doulas as well. It has been a long time coming. I finally caved. We get so many requests and inquiries from potential families, and even our families who sign up for postpartum. They're like, if we can't have you for birth, we're going to have you for afterwards. And so I have been working behind the scenes with a couple of our amazing doulas who, in fact, have been working as birth doulas themselves in their own private practice. And I'm really excited to let everyone know that we have got some great offerings. Now, we're going to be offering birth doula services alone, and we're also going to be offering our birth plus our most favorited package for postpartum, which is our first 40 days. So that includes our 6 postpartum sessions. Each week you get beautiful main course meals and snacks, and of course that lovely in-home care. So that package is going to be our biggest package available through Fill Your Cup, because it's going to include all that prenatal support, the birth and the postpartum side of it as well, including all the meals. So if you're interested, or you know someone who's looking for a birth doula, please head over to our website, ifillyourcup.com, and you can have a look at all the new offerings that we have over there. If you just head on to the tab postpartum care, you'll be able to see all of those new offerings. So we're very, very excited. Okay, so without further ado, let's get into today's guest, who, I hope I don't butcher his name. I always do this. I get so nervous. We have Dr. Dave Liciano, who is a fertility specialist at IVF Australia, and he is going to be talking to us about reproductive or preconception carrier screening. So that is something where, as you'll hear from the interview, it's the testing that we can get done before we conceive our children. And Dave's just great. He's clearly an expert in this area. And he's got a real passion for, I guess, genetics and also the importance of it and how it can impact our families and obviously our babies as well. So it was really exciting to sit down with Dave and have a chat about all things testing. I think I mentioned in the podcast that I initially thought I wanted to be a geneticist when I started my science degree. And so I am equally very invested in this area as well. I think, you know, as we say in the beginning of our intro, knowledge is power. And so if you have an opportunity where you can get that knowledge and make informed decisions, then why not? All right, I'm going to stop my rambling. Here is Dr. Dave Luciano.
Hello and welcome to the podcast, Dr. Dave. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So we recently spoke on the podcast about the fact that there's changes in Medicare rebates around genetic testing, and people across Australia now have a huge range of access to testing that previously they did not. Otherwise, they would have to be spending hundreds of dollars to do that. And also, I think the barrier has kind of come down as well in terms of the hoops that we need to jump through. We don't necessarily have to have a family history or anything like that. And in a previous podcast, we've spoken to a guest who has actually undergone some genetic testing pre-conception. And we spoke to her about her journey and what that looked like, and so, so interesting. But now we have one of the experts on, and you are obviously very passionate about that. Did you want to kind of give us a bit of background about yourself and where that passion lies?
So I'm primarily a fertility specialist and obstetrician with a strong interest in laparoscopic surgery. I fell into the world of fertility many, many years ago, having found a mentor. Shout out to Professor Michael Chapman when I was a little medical student. And so IVF was my first interest. But in order to get to IVF fertility, then you got to do the heart yard and, you know, do the obstetrics and gynecology. And 1 week into starting my obstetrics rotation as a junior doctor, I fell in love with it. And so it's funny how things fall into place. You know, my day to day involved looking after fertility patients, getting them pregnant, and then we look after them all the way till they hold healthy baby in their arms. And if throughout the journey they need some sort of surgery, usually laparoscopy, hysteroscopy, part of the investigations, then that's also my area of interest. So, you know, I'm. Not by design, I kind of fell into this place where then I have the privilege of being able to look after someone, quote unquote, a holistic point of view. It's an incredible journey, and to be part of that is a privilege. So I remind myself of that every day.
It sounds very similar. So I'm a biochemist by trade, and it was that classic thing where I thought I was obsessed with genetics, and then I realized there was way too much maths for me. And I had one extra unit that I needed to fill, and I was like, oh, there's this thing called biochemistry, and a couple of friends were doing it at uni, and I thought, yeah, I'll just like use that to fill, you know, that in. And I had a very similar experience. I walked into my first lecture and was mesmerized. And the guy who actually gave the lecture ended up being my honors and PhD supervisor. So the rest is history, right? But when you know, you know.
Yeah, just fell into the things, you know. You can plan all you want, and then before you know it, no.
You're already there. So we're going to be talking about obviously this reproductive and preconception carrier screening test. Can you walk the listeners through what is that? Who has access to it? Why should we be doing this?
So reproductive carrier screening has been around for many, many years, right? But it's the recognition and the public knowledge of it is not as well publicized, right? Historically, it's aimed for people with, as you mentioned, with a family history, someone who comes from, say, a cultural or ethnicity that is known to have a higher proportion of carrier status, right? Or they've got a child that had been affected by the disease, right? So those are some of the historically common reasons why we would then send someone for preconception screening. And over the years, we discovered that the carrier status is actually more common than we think. So just to paint a picture, we know cystic fibrosis, right? So in Australia, the carrier status is around about 1 in 25 to 1 in 30, which meant that about 1 in 30 people carry the cystic fibrosis gene. But again, cystic fibrosis is what we call an autosomal recessive, which means you need to inherit both genes from each parent in order to potentially become affected. Because being a carrier is not a problem, right? But it's when you're affected, that's when it can affect your quality of life, it can reduce your lifespan, and importantly, it can reduce your health span, right? So then we start thinking, hey, probably worth exposing or at least informing more people about this, right? And especially in our field, in the fertility field, where we have the opportunity to run tests and to comprehensively investigate someone's background, which includes their genetic carrier state. So we started to do more and more of this. And then over the last few years, it's more primary care providers, so GPs, they become a bit more aware of it. And then recently, the government introduced a Medicare bulk bill 3 gene panel.
Okay. And so what is part of that panel?
Yeah, so it screens for 3 conditions. One mm-hmm. is cystic fibrosis. Mm-hmm. One is called spinal muscular atrophy. And mm-hmm. another one is called Fragile X syndrome. So right. those are individual genetic conditions that we can screen people for, that we know that the carrier status in the population is relatively common, mm-hmm. but also that we know carry a heavy disease burden. So it's not a bad idea to test. And if you are indeed found to be a carrier, then potentially test your partner, and then we go from there. And if your partner also carries the same pathogenic, so no good gene variant, then mm-hmm. we have the option of potentially doing a pre-implantation genetic screening and only put back embryos that are unaffected by that disease.
Right. And so I guess before people kind of, you know, I'm thinking of a scenario where people thinking about having a child and, you know, they're listening to this podcast and thinking, okay, well, what are the first steps? What should I be doing? Are there certain things that people should know about before they get tested?
Yeah, I think this is the part where the counseling side is important. Some people, they don't want to get tested because they don't, even if they did carry the gene, they might not do anything about it, right? So then you go, why do I bother testing? And that's reasonable too, right? So the first point of contact for the most part is the GP, okay? So I just attended a GP seminar a few months ago and we discussed this quite intensely. So it's getting out there. I think probably worth seeing your GP and saying, hey, I'm planning to fall pregnant. I heard about this reproductive carrier screening or preconception genetic screening. Tell me more about it. So then the GP will then guide you through the 3 gene panel. There's also a more comprehensive panel looking at hundreds and hundreds of genes, but this will incur an out-of-pocket cost, right? So bear that in mind. But the one that the government fully subsidized, contains only the 3-gene panel.
And what's on the more extensive panel?
Yeah, a myriad of genes.
Can you pick and choose, or it's just all in? Like it's
it's all in. So depending on which provider, generally looking at about 400 or 500 genes. So it's a screening tool, right? It's not a specific thing. It's a different story if, for example, you have a child that's affected by a genetic condition and they discovered, hey, that is that we know the pathogenic gene. And so we could then potentially screen for that specific gene in the couple. But this is considered a screen. So it's a full panel of hundreds and hundreds of genes. And if we discover that you are a carrier of certain genes, then your partner has the option to be screened as well.
Gotcha. And so what does the test actually look like for people? And also, I recall in my previous interview with the mum that I was speaking with, it was like months before she received the results. Is that the norm, or are we going to see a bit more of a fast track with the uptick in, I guess, appetite for this?
Yeah, so the general ETA is about 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay.
She might have done it a few years ago.
Yeah, I think she did. Yeah, okay. And is it a blood test or what is it?
Most of the time it's a blood test, but there's the option of a swab of it inside the mouth. But a blood test is a bit more comprehensive and a quicker turnaround.
And I guess I always think about, like, back to when I was pregnant with my daughter and, you know, testing. We did, oh God, I can't even remember what it was, but we did the blood test at, like, is it like 10 or 12 weeks?
The NIPT.
We did that. And I guess there's always that concept of, like, it's not 100% accurate, right? Is that still on par? Because I had my daughter like 6 years ago. So the
NIPT is, so in biology, nothing is 100%, right? Yeah. But NIPT is pretty good. So we're looking at about 99.8% accuracy for the big trisomies, right? So trisomy 21, trisomy 18, and trisomy 13. Now, if it returns a high risk, now because it's considered a screening test, it's a risk profile that you're looking at, right? Not a yes or no answer. And if that test shows that you are at high risk of having a pregnancy that's affected by this genetic condition, then we would move on, or at least offer diagnostic testing. So diagnostic testing is a bit more invasive, but that's when you can definitively say, hey, whether baby does have this condition or not. So that diagnostic testing can be in the form of amniocentesis, where they insert a tiny needle through the abdomen into the sac, right, the pregnancy sac, or what we call CVS, chorionic villus sampling. Amniocentesis has largely taken over CVS because amniocentesis is safer with a lower risk for miscarriage.
Interesting. All right, then. And so let's say theoretically you have this test, you get some red flags that come back, your partner gets the same red flags. And, like, I think this is the point also where we need to, you know, just clear with people. You both have to have the same red flags, right? Like, because if you're both carriers and if it's autosomal recessive, then it's not going to do much. You're just going to be, your child will, you know, could be a carrier as well, could not. Yeah. So there's no sort of like disease state. But if you both are carriers, what is the next step? What should people start thinking about? And I guess we've already touched on, like, genetic counseling and things like that. What does that roadmap look like for couples?
Yeah. So let's say the woman do a preconception screening. She was then discovered to carry certain gene variant, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now then the partner gets tested and they also carry the same gene. I remember we talked about the same gene. They could carry gene ABC and she could carry gene XYZ. Doesn't matter, because at the most, the offspring will be a carrier, right? There's a chance that they won't be affected by either genes. But if they carry, if there's an overlap of these abnormal genes, then that's when we need to have a conversation, right? Number one, the inheritance pattern, right? How is it inherited? Is it autosomal dominant recessive? Is it X-linked, for example? Number two, the phenotype. What do you expect a child that's, what what do you expect physical manifestation of a child that's affected, right? Because then that would affect your decision whether or not you want to go down the whole IVF, embryo testing, carrier mapping type of path, or you might say, you know what, I'll take that 25% chance that my child might be affected, because I know that the physical manifestations might be minimal, right? Something along that line. So this is the conversation that needs to be had if they did return a positive carrier status, right? For the most part, in this day and age, we have the technology to prevent, right, an abnormal embryo from being transferred. So then that involves having a chat with someone like me, having a chat with the genetics counselor, and then we all as a team come together and said, all right, let's do some IVF, collect some eggs, put together the sperm to collect to make embryos. The embryos will then get biopsy, right? We will then, and then the biopsy takes a few weeks to come back, so then we will freeze the embryos. And once the results come back, we will know which of these embryos are affected, which of these embryos are carriers, and which are neither affected nor a carrier, right? So then we'll know which one to put back and which one not to put back.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think on that point as well, like from a real life stance, what are the situations now here in Australia in terms of reasonings for termination for medical reasons, whether it be, you know, you're 8 weeks, 10 weeks pregnant versus looking at the embryo? Are there different legislations around what stage you can do that? Or
yeah, good question. Up to late second trimester, we allow, not allow, the law allows for termination for at least in New South Wales. So it's different states have got different legislation, right? I'm based in New South Wales. So generally, yeah, we allow up to 24 weeks. Before having to go down the having a board review and those things. That's why doing a reproductive carrier screen offers us the option of not having to go down that termination path, right? Because then we would be testing them at the embryo stage before putting it back into the uterus. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If then the next step would be the NIPT. Remember that blood test that we talked about at 10 weeks? And if we did discover, hey, there's a trisomy or genetically abnormal pregnancy, then we go down the route of diagnostic. And once it's diagnosed, then we can discuss the option of termination, for example.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And what are the diseases or disorders that are on the list, or is it
a myriad? Yeah, but okay. the big genetic abnormality that can be discovered during the NIPT are the three trisomies, so trisomy 21, 18, and 13, sex chromosome abnormality, and some sort of micro deletions, depending on which company we go with. So then once there is a suspicion of it, then we go down the diagnostic route, and then so on and so forth. Generally, you want to move pretty fast just because, you know.
Are those conditions lethal for the fetus anyway, or...?
Not always.
Okay.
So most genetic abnormality would result in either a non-implantation or early trimester miscarriage, right? Because then that's your answer. But some are what we call compatible with life. So then the pregnancy continues to grow. And that's where the 10-week NIPT, the blood test, would then shed some light on it. But you're right, because up to that 10 weeks, nature would have already screened for pregnancies that are abnormal.
Okay, that's interesting. Okay, and so people have kind of walked through that process. Are there, and I think you've already alluded to this, because like I've got one of my questions, which is like, should people always opt in for IVF when we're doing genetic screening? But there are obviously people who are just like, look, we're just going to like roll the dice and see how we go.
No, of course not. Absolutely. I think we're in the business of giving people options. You know, you don't always have to go down the IVF route. I mean, you can just do preconception screening. And if you are a carrier of something, then we could consider testing your partner if you wish. And if they also carry the same gene, then we have to have that discussion, right? Hey, do you want to take that 1 in 4 chance that maybe we'll get affected? And then the question is, what kind of physical manifestation would we be looking at? So that's what we call the phenotype, right? What's the phenotype of that genetic abnormality? And some people would then say, you know what, I'll roll the dice. And that's fine as well, as long as we're all informed, right? Some people would say, you know what, I want to screen the embryos because I want to make sure that whatever embryo that I'm creating is not affected by that disease, right? So that's the second option. So then you can go down the whole IVF and embryo testing route. But no, I don't think it has to go on IVF always, you know.
And is there anything else about this, I guess, journey that you'd want to inform the listeners about? Anything from like a real life perspective, or maybe even myths and misconceptions about genetic testing that, you know, this is your opportunity, Dave?
I think one thing that we need to always think is nothing is guaranteed in biology, right? Number one. Number two, genomics is in its infancy. Okay, so the technology, it evolves rapidly, right? So speak to your doctor, Google all you want. I encourage patients to do their own research, but take whatever you read with a grain of salt, because you'll be reading it from the lens of someone who's not in this field. You know, speak to the experts, speak to your GP, speak to your fertility specialist, right? And it's not easy, you know, to deal with the news. Say, hey, you're a carrier of this, and your partner's a carrier of this, and you know, potentially. So it can be overwhelming. So sometimes take a step back. You know, you don't have to go full throttle, pedal to the metal, and because it can be overwhelming, right?
Mm.
Take a step back, and there's always an option to.
Yeah, I it was actually interesting that you say that, because in the previous interview with the mum, she was talking about the fact that when she discovered her results, she told her family, and think her partner told his family as well. And there was definitely a different reception from both sides as to, you know, we don't want to know about this. We're not going to, like, you know, we're not going to test our own kids. Like, you know, I can imagine it would be quite like anything. I mean, one of my favorite movies growing up was Gattaca. So it's like, you know, very sci-fi, and everyone's ranked on their genetic status and things like that. But it's a brave new world out there sometimes. And you kind of think, oh, like, what am I going to do with this information?
I agree. I mean, in the spirit of Gattaca, Ethan Hawke made it to space.
He did.
Having supposedly been genetically inferior.
Yes. Thank you, Jubal. Yeah,
I think we're humans, you know. We all have deficiencies.
We do.
And within those imperfections, you know, lies the essence of being humans. I don't know. No, I cannot. Yeah. How far do we go, you know?
Yeah,
At the same time, I also appreciate the desire to want your child to have the best start in life, to not want your child to have to suffer, you know, that kind of thing. And I totally appreciate that. So I don't know. I think each to their own. You know?
Yeah.
That's the beauty of being humans, I think.
As someone who grew up with a family who 3 of the children had cystic fibrosis, it was a very eye-opening experience, even as a young child, and 2 of the 3 of them are no longer with us. So it's which was my drive to become a geneticist, like, easily. That's why I hit science so hard. But it's one of those things where, like, knowledge is power, but what are you going to do with it? And, you know, in the end, we all have deficiencies, as you say. So yeah, it's a tough one. But I think if the opportunity is there and people want to go for it, then I just said, who doesn't want to give their kid the best start in life, right?
Yeah, I agree. No, the technology is there.
Anything you wanted to add before we jump into our rapid fire?
Nope.
Okay, here we go. What is your top tip for people who are thinking about going in with the plunge of genetic testing, or they're thinking about having a baby?
Stay informed and have an open mind. Don't get too overwhelmed. You Google and you're bound to like, and you go, whoa, what the?
Yeah, it's a slippery slope, those forums.
and that's okay. Like, it's there, you know, and use it. But speak to someone who knows, so that they can give you a different perspective.
Mm.
You know, so I think have an open mind and just, yes, speak to someone properly. Okay. You know.
Do you have a go-to resource, whether it be I don't know, a book, a workshop, anything that you kind of pass on to your patients?
Mm, yeah. Wikipedia.
Really?
No, I'm joking. Don't.
I was going to say, oh my goodness, this is the first.
No, I tell patients, like, I'm their resource. You know, I'm always readily available for them. You can email me, you can chat with me on the phone, you can do Zoom. But speak to your doctor, speak to a geneticist, you know, speak to whoever, because you can read stuff, but you'll be reading it through the lens of a layperson, which is good to for the basics. Oh, speaking of basics, yes, so there's a New South Wales genomics website with lots of information on these things, different providers, Laverty, Virtus. So I'm with IVF Australia, so we've got information on these things. So read that, and that's perfect as a basis, as a basic, and then speak to someone if you want to dwell deeper, especially if you do have that, you do carry a certain pathogenic gene variant.
Mm. Okay, that's useful. Thank you. And our last question, which we ask all of our guests, and we borrow this one from Brené Brown. Have you heard of Brené Brown? She's an expert in like behavior and things like that. What do you keep on your bedside table?
My phone.
That's it?
It's terrible, man. Yeah, but I'm on call 24/7.
I can imagine.
My patients go in labor in the middle of the night. I cannot miss the call, you know. My phone is on loud.
Wow. Oh, I don't envy you at all. I mean, I'm a postpartum doula. I don't do birth doulaing.
Yeah.
And so many people they're like, oh my God, why don't you be a birth doula? And I'm like, because I really like to sleep. Now that like I can, now my daughter's six, you know, it's like I'm just scraping back all those hours that I lost. Dave, it's been so lovely to speak with you. Can you tell the listeners, where can we find you? You're in New South Wales. So tell us all your details.
I should write it down. I work predominantly in Kogarah and Westmead, at St. George Private and Westmead Private Hospital. I work with IVF Australia, the best fertility provider in the world, I might say. And if any questions, this is my card. My email is dave.listijono@ivf.com.au. Easy to remember.
We'll put that all in the show notes for everyone.
Then you can just, I've got an Instagram page as well.
Oh, do you?
Where I post educational stuff.
What's your handle on Instagram?
Dr. Dave Listijono.
There we go, people. Get on it. Like, follow, all the things. I'm going to do that after I jump off this interview. Thank you so much, Dave. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak with you. It's been very, very informative. I love the fact that we've got a real life and an expert now under our wraps with the podcast, and this is what it's all about here at the Science of Motherhood. So thank you again, and I hope you have a lovely day.
Same to you.
Go catch some babies.
Will do. Yes, ma'am.
Thanks. Thanks, Dave. See ya. Bye.
See you, Ronnie.
If you loved this episode, please hit the subscribe button and leave a review. If you know someone out there who would also love to listen to this episode, please hit the share button so they can benefit from it as well. Thank you for listening to The Science of Motherhood. We'll see you next time. Bye. Thank you for listening to The Science of Motherhood. If you would like to contact us, we are at ifillyourcup.com, or you can DM us at @IFillYourCup_ via Instagram. You can find all of our services, including our postpartum in-home care and our Fill Your Freezer meal delivery service as well, through both those channels. Thanks so much for listening.